Les colloques du Collège de France.
Je vais donner la parole en quelques instants à Nomi Sala. Nomi Sala, est, comme vous le voyez derrière moi, il y a beaucoup de logos, d'acronymes. Elle est actuellement chercheure à Burgos. Burgos est ce grand laboratoire qui était construit presque ex nihilo suite aux découvertes extraordinaires dans la région d'Atapuerca et ses différents sites. Et donc, Noémie va nous présenter en anglais, mais c'est traduit en français à l'écran, une communication intitulée « Les racines du comportement funéraire au Pléistocène moyen ». Noémie.
Merci beaucoup. Bonjour, merci Jean-Jacques for the invitation. Pour l'invitation, c'est un privilège d'être ici. Et j'aimerais pouvoir vous parler de ma présentation en français, mais je voulais m'excuser, mes compétences en français sont limitées. So I will do my best in English. I hope you don't mind. My name is Noemi Sala, and it's a pleasure to be here in this fabulous place with all of you here. And I want to share with you my last research regarding the roots of the funerary behavior in the Middle Pleistocene. Well, usually when colleagues are discussing regarding the funerary behavior, we usually focus on the late Pleistocene. This is the green part in the upper part of the slide. And usually the discussion and the debates are regarding if Neanderthals and Paleolithic Homo sapiens are able to conduct some kind of funerary behavior. But just for people that perhaps is not so familiar with the geological time, I wanted to show here the last million of years and see how the late Pleistocene is actually a small part of the time, and most corresponds to the Middle Pleistocene. And many fossils, many human populations are in both in Africa and Eurasia, and little is what we know about the cognitive ability regarding to the funerary behavior. So today I want to invite you to a time travel to see how to deal with this chronology in terms of funerary behavior. So, usually the debate is focused on Neanderthals, especially in their abilities to conduct some symbolic behavior such as rock art or adornments or some kind of symbolic objects, spoken language and the capabilities of doing some hunting strategies. And usually we are focused on Europe or Eurasia. And of course, funerary behavior is one of the most important things that in the middle of this discussion. But what we understand when we talk about funerary behavior, because in the literature, in the talks, and everywhere, there are sometimes used as synonyms different terms, such as funerary burial or mortuary, that perhaps it's important to make a distinction between them in order to be able to look for traces of funerary practices in the fossil record, because otherwise perhaps it's a bit confusing. So I like to use this definition by Paul Petit. We need to distinguish between mortuary behavior and funerary behavior. In this case, mortuary behavior is when some living individuals of the group change the behavior when someone of the same group died. These are just some examples: a chimpanzee cleaning the teeth of a recently dead individual, the moms carry the bodies of the babies' death during days, weeks, or even in some cases months. The same with dolphins, and of course termites, and of course elephants is like the most paradigmatic cases of mortuary practices. So animals, especially social animals, are able to engage in some kind of pain or even grief when the death of somebody of the group happened. Nevertheless, this behavior happened between individuals and in the moment, but never is maintained as a cultural practice. In this case, funerary fills this gap. I mean, share with the mortuary practices that some kind of action is done between the alive individuals and the dead, but this behavior is maintained through time, and the natural fact of death is transformed into a cultural practice. The mortuary activities related with these funerary actions can be diverse. Since cannibalism, I know this is a complicated thing, but sometimes cannibalism can be a funerary mortuary practice. Of course, burning, burial in different complexity ways, and even the sky burials, that this is just to give the corpses for scavengers, and this is part of the ritualism of some cultures. So, but nevertheless, when we are talking about funerary practices in the Paleolithic, we always have in our mind something like that. This is the famous painting of Thedenec Buria. This is the representation of one of the most iconic Upper Paleolithic burials. This is Dolní Vestonice. And as you can see, there are many symbolic things such as mammoth's bones, ivory and ochre, and of course the excavation of a pit in the stratigraphy. And this is what we are obsessed to look for in the fossil record to recognize the funerary behavior. And of course, burial is part of the funerary behavior. I think no one doubts about this relationship. That's the reason why we always focus our research in finding things like a pit in the stratigraphy to put the body and then to bury it again, the presence of the complete skeletons with anatomical association, more or less, and of course the presence of some symbolic object representing some kind of grave god or things like that. So, almost we need to find something like this to accept the funerary behavior in ancient societies. But, okay, burial is part of the funerary behavior, but not necessarily we need a burial to recognize a funerary behavior. So there are many other manifestations of mortuary practices related with funerary practices. Here you have some examples, covering with rocks or the uses of natural locations in the landscape or in the cave, such as shafts or chimneys or even rock ledges, without the modification of the space, of course burning, and of course the sky burials again. The problem here is most of these practices are invisible in the archaeological record because it's more difficult that the remains are preserved until now and that we are able to recognize them as funerary practices. So I will offer you an alternative point of view, just to be able to search for some patterns that allows us to approach these complex possible scenarios. These are places for the dead, the use of the same place for accumulating or doing whatever mortuary practice in places related with the death, time, I mean, the repetition of the same activities through the time could suggest some kind of cultural behavior, a pattern, and of course, the taphonomic analysis of the fossil itself that sometimes is an undone work, in search for different other scenarios to exclude them as a possibility of the original accumulation of corpses. Carnivores, cannibalism, or any, if we are able to reconstruct the causes of death, sometimes we can discard or accept accidents, and so on. So let's see if with these three keys we are able to see further and make a broader view for the analysis of possible funerary behavior in the middle Pleistocene. So the questions here are, is Homo sapiens the only species with funerary behavior? Since when? And how this behavior has evolved through the time and our geography. So I invite you to make a time travel with me to the past, and we will move from now to the Middle Pleistocene. So I will briefly stop in the Upper Paleolithic. Here in this map you have some points, of course are not all of them, but the most iconic or famous sites with funerary behavior in the Upper Paleolithic, with Homo sapiens in the center of the picture. Here you have some examples, and there is no any kind of debate or doubt about the capability of this population for engaging funerary behavior, especially because the manifestation, the mortuary practice related with the funerary, is similar than the Occidental culture of death right now. A very nice pits with the complete skeleton, sometimes one, two, three, or whatever, and a very complex symbolic object in relation with the tombs. Then we move a bit more back to the time, and then let's stop in the Middle Paleolithic. I want to stop a long time here because I think Bruno will extend this part of the archaeological record. But here you can see almost the most accepted funerary behavior related with Neanderthals and Paleolithic Homo sapiens. And you can see two main focuses. One is, of course, in France, and the other one is here in Israel. And there you can see that there are some spots in the continent, but the main focus are here. Here you have some examples that has the three keys, the time, the place for deaths, and the taphonomic analysis that allows us to discard another scenarios. Here you have some Neanderthals, Shanidar in the current Iraq, Tabun, Amuth, and of course La Ferrasi, with many individuals in that site, and without any other taphonomic traces that explain the accumulation of human remains in that particular places. And here you have some of the most relevant Middle Paleolithic Homo sapiens, Kapsed and Esshul, the same thing for them. And let's go to the Middle Pleistocene. Then you see many orange spot. Here you can see some of the sites with human remains. The point here is most of cases are represented a mandible here, a cranium there. Sometimes the age of the site is under discussion yet. So sometimes we feel that the Middle Pleistocene is like a dark tunnel with just a few information, just few fossils. When the fossils are preserved, there are just a few of them in each site, but in the center of this light you can see a small spot of light. So I invite you to come and explore this spot of light. And here we are in one of the sites with many human remains accumulated at the same place that allows us to make a deeper analysis of these matters. This place is called La Cima de los Huesos. This is located in Spain, in Burgos, specifically in Sierra de Atapuerca, where there are many other sites that I will not explain today, but I will focus here. Cima de los Huesos is a deep cave inside a karstic context, so this is not easy the access to get there. And Cima de los Huesos is famous for containing a huge accumulation of human remains, more than 7,000 human remains, from the entire skeleton. The site has been excavated during more than 40 years, led by Juan Luis Arzuaga. And it's a particular place, a very weird context here. Of course, we don't have bits in the stratigraphy and no modification of the space because the cave is different than we are used to work on. This is a small cave, and you can access to this part of the gallery just downing a vertical chimney of 14 meters, and there are no any evidence of living activities for the human population here, such as ungulates, cut marks on the bones, or the manufacturing the lithics, or nothing like that. So only deaths are evidenced here. In this particular place, many individuals of carnivores, mainly bears of the species Ursus denningeri, typical from the Middle Pleistocene, have been recovered here, more than 200 individuals, together with at least 29 hominins and a single lithic tool, this Auxilian hand axe. So since the beginning, many hypotheses has been under the debate regarding the accumulation of these hominins in this particular place. And the hypotheses are very, very different, and since the intentional accumulation of corpses with or without funerary component, of course funerary, carnivores and geological agents, accident, and other natural causes. So I want to explore with you just the four main hypotheses that we have been exploring in the last decades, since the geological agents, carnivores as accumulators, accidents, and intentional accumulation of death corpses. Well, regarding the geological aspect, I don't want to extend here, but we analyzed the clays that contains the human remains, and we were not able to find any kind of highly energetic geological process that explains the accumulation and the transport of the accumulation of 29 corpses. So if you have any question, we can discuss about that, but I don't want to waste time in this spot, because I want to focus in the rest three hypotheses, because these three are approached through the taphonomic analysis. Of course, here in Cima de los Huesos, don't have any kind of context, archaeological context, that can give us some clues about the origin of accumulation. We only have the bones, so it was quite important to make a very detailed taphonomic analysis of every single bone fragment. In Cima de los Huesos, the collection is broken, so every year of excavation we make some puzzles to put together different fragments to get entire bones. And regarding the carnivore scenario, we analyzed this part by approaching taphonomic actualistic research with different species of carnivores. We compared the patterns of modification by these carnivores compatible with the Cima, with what we found in Cima, and we analyzed and studied different carnivore context in the Pleistocene record from different sites in Spain, such this one. This is one high in Aden in Pinilla del Valle in Madrid. So the comparative analysis between what we found in Cima de los Huesos with the collections modified by carnivores, we can see that Cima de los Huesos, the fracture pattern is not absolutely different what is expected for the carnivore modification. Here you have different sites with gnawing assemblages from the Pleistocene, and here you have Cima de los Huesos with another places related with natural traps for bears and mainly postmortem fracturing processes. together with Sima de los Huesos Homo sample. The same with the carnivore tooth marks, because Sima de los Huesos contains a very, very, very low percentage of modification by carnivores in terms of tooth marks, less than 1%. And usually the preservation of the most interesting parts, skeletal parts for carnivores, are intact in Sima de los Huesos. So some of the tooth marks that we found in a very, we think that this is very sporadic thing, and this is compatible with bears and lions in terms of dimension of tooth marks, and we are now working on some new techniques in machine learning techniques and something like that to distinguish between these two carnivores. Nevertheless, nor carnivores and nor lions used to accumulate carcasses in their dens. Not now and not in the past. So anyway, the interpretation is that the few tooth marks that we found in the Sima de los Huesos collection, not only in hominins but also in other carnivores, is the product of some scavenging of some of the remains that stay in the surface of the cave by some of the birds that fell into the shaft, and they survive, and they just gnaw some bones on the surface. But we can't explain the accumulation induced by carnivores of 29 individuals, and no horses, no deers, and no other species in this site. So we have the two hypotheses, and it's not easy to approach this, because the only difference between accidents and intentional accumulation of corpses is that the person here is alive and the person here is already dead, but the collagen content in the skeletal remains is exactly the same. So that's quite difficult to approach this. But we made it anyway. And we analyzed the collection to distinguish between antemortem, I mean, with healing, surviving of the trauma, postmortem. In our case, this is long time after the death, when the bones lost the collagen, the organic part, so they behave differently when are broken, and in between. The perimortem, this kind of fractures that occurs near of the time of death without any healing. It could be cause of death or the origin can be after the death, but with the collagen still on the bones. And we are lucky because in Sima de los Huesos we have many, 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 many fractures. So we were able to study and analyze many fractures. From the 2,000 cranial fragments, we were able to put together almost 1,000 to make a collection of 20 cranial individuals as a puzzle. As you can see, some of them are represented by small pieces, but others are complete cranium. And here we were able to find some healed trauma, postmortem fractures, very easy to recognize through the right angles and jagged surfaces of the bones, and in some cases something that is more typical of perimortem. Regarding the antemortem, we were surprised because we found in 18 of the 20 individuals, cranial individuals, and are absolutely in a randomly way in the orientation of the healed traumas, and sometimes we have only one, and sometimes we have more than 10 in some individuals. And here you can see in red and yellow colors is the location of the antemortem trauma. We are not sure about what is going on here, because this is very randomly oriented, and it affects to immature adults, males, females, so we were not able to find any kind of pattern here. The main fracturing features corresponds to postmortem. But if you see here, this is a small fraction with compatible with Perimortem, and I want to show you some examples. This is cranium 3 with a penetrating fracture in the occipital, in the left part of the occipital, compatible with Perimortem trauma. Here, cranium 5 with a left parietal fracture, compatible also with Perimortem trauma. Cranium 7, this is the second one with a penetrating circular in the left part of the occipital bone. Cranium 9, a circular penetrating trauma in the left part of the occipital bone. Cranium 13, the same pattern in the left part of the nuc plane, another penetrating fracture, circular. Cranium 14, again. And cranium 17 is, in this case, the pattern is different because we don't have this penetrating trauma in the left part of the occipital bone, but we have two trauma, different trauma, with a notch in corner for the two traumas. So we approach this comparison of the outline of the trauma 1 and trauma 2 with the virtual reconstruction, locating some landmarks equidistantly, and just to rotate and superimpose both of them without changing the size. And this is what we observe. These are exactly the same, the size and shape. So what do you think? This could be produced by accident, falling through the shaft twice with the same object? I don't think so. In addition to cranium 17, the recurrent pattern of penetrating trauma in circular shape in this part of the cranium has been recognized in cranium 3, 7, 9, 13, 14, and 18, six crania of the 20. So this is also not really compatible with an accidental fortuitous activities. So the explanation, the most parsimonious, it was that these individuals, at least these individuals, was already dead when they reached the cima de los huesos. So it was possible for us at least to reject the accident, at least for these individuals. So the only hypothesis that is still alive is that the position of the death corpses. And you may ask, well, the intentional accumulation of bodies, and this is funerary then? Well, if you remember, we were talking about three clues. Several individuals, so something recurrent. The taphonomy, we exclude any other possibilities for the accumulation of corpses by taphonomic analysis, and we still want more, that this is time, and this is what we are working now. We are trying to see if the accumulation of human remains was synchronous, I mean at the same period, or not. Because if the answer is not, I can tell you that this is not published yet, but we advance a bit in this question. If the answer is that this is an asynchronous accumulation, then we could be approaching to a pattern, something repetitive on time. And the next question, well, if we accept CIMA, if we have the time machine and we are able to see through a small window and confirm that this is a funerary behavior, this is a single case, there are no other places in the fossil record from the Middle Pleistocene with something similar, then we are working in a big project trying to analyze all the human remains from the European and Near East fossil record to make the taphonomic analysis. And now we are working in other possibilities that contains these three the main points that we have been discussing, and these are some in UK, in partner with, some are in Germany, and of course, Cima de los Huesos and Copa Negra is also in Spain. So we are working now in here, and thank you so much for your attention. Merci beaucoup.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.